episode of the Gamer Talk podcast. Anthony O'Donnell is my guest today. Hey, Anthony, happy to have you.
I'm glad to be on.
So how's it going? How was your day so far?
Not too bad. Usual busy day in game dev.
Yeah, especially as art director, right? Lots of things to take care of, lots of people to speak with.
Yep, we'll be digging into that throughout the conversation. But yes, it's a changing role. And as I'll go through later, my view of what an art director was when I joined in 2007 and what one does today is a very different thing. So I think it's an evolving role as the industry gets more complex and projects get bigger and teams get bigger. And yeah, big conversation there.
Yeah, so you have been quite around some time in the games industry. So yeah, just walk us through your career path. When did you all start out in the games industry? What were your first like steps? Feel free to speak about that.
I'll go for the really quick bit of, like, as a kid growing up, loved all kinds of different types of media, like 90s cartoons, video games, comic books, all that kind of thing. I definitely wanted to get into commercial art in some form. I didn't know how, because being a kid in Ireland back in the 90s, it wasn't very clear the path to this kind of industry, even though there was like a very good reputation for classic animation studios there. So the only kind of course I was aware of was an animation course. So from the age of like 9, 10, right through to graduating high school, I kind of set myself the job of just going in this direction to get on that course. Which I did for like 2 years, was classic animation course. So studied a lot of like drawing, visual language, doing hand key animation on paper. Between that time, also was aspiring to get into comic books naively at the age of 16. This didn't work either. But all these things you learn along the way kind of pushed my skills and my drawing abilities, which is really useful. After doing the course halfway through it, they realized the classic animation industry was starting to change. The advent of video games growing bigger, the kind of CG and movies with the likes of Toy Story and things, there was a huge shift, paradigm shift within the industries. So the course themselves had actually offered at that moment that I could swap from classic animation to video games. So that was pretty much the moment I decided, actually, I like tech, I like PCs, I like software, this sounds exciting. So I immediately swapped course halfway through to be one of the first kind of batch through the college taking that course. And from there, that was like 3ds Max, learning how to model UV unwrap along with the traditional part of the course with life drawing and whatnot. And that pretty much set me on my path then to heading towards the games industry.
Yeah, for me, like, the games industry was, when I grew up, I always played video games, but going into the games industry and like have the career path in this industry was so far away from me and my parents. They were like, they knew what I was doing. My dad was also like in the tech industry. He did work for a mobile chip company. So still then it was like super far away to kind of make a living out of games.
Oh, exactly. My parents are very supportive in that sense that neither of them are very techie or into technology. And even though I'd explain, like, I really love creating things, I don't want to work doing this, both of them have kind of very kind of, I guess, like, one dad was in the army, mechanic, very hands-on jobs, very technical jobs in the real world, not necessarily with software. And they were completely supportive despite not understanding it at all. And for them, it didn't even seem like a real job, but they just supported me with, he's happy, let him go. Which was actually crucial for me, because if he didn't, I would imagine if they had in any way put a blocker in, I may have not proceeded as I did, because I kind of naively just went, yeah, this is amazing, and didn't think about it too much. So I just doggedly followed it and learned everything I could. So when I graduated the course, it took me 2 years to finally get a job in the industry. So I would have graduated around 2004 or five. Then, as most people are going to experience, as soon as you graduate, you work towards that moment. And as soon as that moment passes and you have your last day at the university, college, or whatever it is, you're on your own. It all just stops. Everything stops. Yeah. You walk out that door and now it's you versus the world trying to get a job. And that is always a scary moment. So I took.
How was it for you?
I basically was quite practical again. I think it's my parents, they kind of taught me to be, okay, that's my dream, I'm still going to follow it. But I was working in a pub all the way through my years when I was training and developing my skills to try and get a job in commercial art. So I used to work 4 or 5 evenings a week in a local pub. Then when I finished and graduated the college, I knew straight away I needed to earn money. So I just got a job in a bank in a call center for 2 years. And I learned how to do that job, and I did that job well, and I met nice people. It was fun, but I knew I had to do that to facilitate my free time so I could actually pay for like a PC, pay for all my software, do what I need to do. And it was a bit aimless, where I didn't actually realize the part of video games I wanted to be in. I think there's better resources today than there were then. I had a few months where I wanted to be in concept art, so I started building a concept art portfolio. Then I started to do modeling because that was hot, right? And then jumped onto some animation, and then did kind of more techie shader stuff. And it gave me a good rounded view, and I started to get art tests from different companies that I applied to while I was trying to get in. And each time I kind of got a step further, learned something else, started to meet people on forums. And it wasn't really until I got my opportunity at Evolution Studios back in 2007. They had an opening for many people, and it was just a case of I had the right skill set at the right time, and I was available, and I just went, did the interview, and got the job. Thankfully, to the people that interviewed me that day, saw some potential, and they gave me my break, and that was it. I was just lucky to get in, and spent 9 years then at that studio, going from kind of a junior prop artist when I first started for the first MotorStorm game DLC, right through to Drive Club as a lead. And I just learned so much from that team during that experience, that they've pretty much formed me into the artist I am today, basically. Because they were cool projects where you had a lot of creative control. You had to be very technically minded to make sure you hit the quality bar and they run well. And they were quite groundbreaking at the time for each of those projects in their own way. They all tried something very ambitious with the technology.
So you worked on MotorStorm, which is quite funny because I remember this as a kid, and it was like such a cool game back in the day. Is there like the studio still active? I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a weird one with that. So when Sony ended the studio and they shut down, they were picked up. The team was picked up by Codemasters. After 9 years of racing games, I decided not to stay, even though I really liked the team. And I've subsequently gone to hire and work with some people from the team since. But I went a different route because I wanted to change. But the team themselves stayed together. And then Codemasters was bought out by EA. So now they're all EA employees, and the team is still together. And there are still people who had worked on the WRC games and MotorStorm games and Drive Club are still at the studio. So some of those artists and legends have been there for 20 plus years, which is totally wild. I really enjoyed working with them. I really enjoyed racing games, but I prefer narrative driven, third person games. I love the kind of FPSs, campaigns. I'm not really a multiplayer gamer myself in my own time.
I much
prefer kind of single player short experiences to kind of immerse me in a world and just really get into something and then get in, get out. And I kind of wanted to experience some of that. So I consciously, at that point in my career, after the kind of studio ended and my job was gone at Evolution, I started to look around and join TT Games for 2 years to try Lego games, which is really cool, working on the different IPs and kind of working on the third person platformer. And those kind of games had their own challenges with the kind of pace they were getting built at, and the team was very big. It was a very different experience because at Evolution the art team would have been about 20 to 40 depending on the period and point of production, where at TT Games there was like hundreds of people all involved in different departments. It was very different to production experience, which I found really, really good for my career and broadening how I used to know how to work in a completely different way. And this is why I always advocate people should try different studios and different paths in their career, because you never know where things are going to end up. So I try to stay open. After that, I decided for a change again. So I joined FireSprite for 2 years to work on some VR games, which is really cool, with some people I'd worked with in the past. After 2 years there and transitioning from kind of lead to associate art director over a couple of years, I then joined Lead3T, which is where I'm at the moment, as part of the Keywords group as a co-developer. And basically what attracted me to that role was being an art director and co-development is quite interesting because you get to work with some great teams from all over the world. You get to learn from art directors and leads and concept artists and developers across many different genres, many different teams. And I found the last 3 years to be just astronomical in terms of my growth and development and what I've learned about what makes a good production, how to set the vision for projects, things you should consider to make sure the teams are successful and functioning correctly. And I think it's been basically the best boot camp you can look for as an art director. Because if you're in a singular studio and all the studios working on a singular IP and everyone's going in that one direction, you're going to have the experience of that one instance. You're going to know how to build that one game very well. You're going to know how to problem solve and sort out that one thing exceptionally well based on that IP. Where co-development, it really challenges you to, I think in the 3 years I've been there, I've worked on about 5 different projects, different genres, different engines, different types of team makeups, different experiences. It's been really, really good, I think. So yeah, if you want to get into art direction, I recommend co-development. It'll be the best schooling for you based on my own experience at the moment.
You need to be quite versatile, right? You need to you need to wear so many hats. You already need to wear many hats as an art director itself, like in a in a studio. But with co-development, you even need to have like even a wider skill range, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, for me, depending on the project, my involvement changes. Because I kind of, the best way to kind of describe me as an art director of co-development is I tend to fill the gaps of what the other teams need at that moment, whether it's extra bandwidth in a certain area or if they need extra support at the art direction level. So it could be anything from visual direction to sorting out best practices, sorting out pipelines, organizing teams, hands-on getting work done, problem solving a certain aspect or feature of a game. It can range and vary. So it can be very, very wide for the production vision, or it can go very, very feature focused on, we really need to deliver this with you and your team. Can you do this feature? So nice. It does change, and it's definitely a lot of hats. And that's kind of one of the things I like most about it, is the versatility and what I get to learn on a daily basis is fantastic.
Nice. So you have been quite for a long time now in the industry, I would say around 15 years, right?
Yeah, it's about 16 and a bit now, but
it's 16.
Old enough to be old.
Yeah. So like, how would you say have times changed in game development and also in the games industry since then? Like how was the vibe back then? Maybe was it more like the startup thingy, or how is it today? Like, how did times change for you personally, and but also like career-wise?
Because for me, from the personal perspective, the role has just changed. Because I've said this story many times, but when I first joined the industry around 2007, my first kind of year or so in the industry, and the first thing I said to someone was, oh, I never want to be an art director, because I didn't understand the job. And I was like, it just seems like you just kind of stay at a very high level away from the work. Because at that point, my point of vision was, I make assets and I love making 3D models and I like putting content into the game. I didn't quite understand the job. So back then, in terms of the industry, the art director would have actually looked at the general vision of the game. They would have provided concepts, art bibles, whatever the team needed to let them off. And there was a lot more freedom back then that the team could interpret that, and the teams were smaller. So everyone was a bit more generalist, a bit more multidiscipline. So my first few experiences, I was given like a kind of few concepts, a bit of a paragraph for a level from the design team, a list of requirements of what it needed to be in terms of a level. And then you just get left alone for months to iterate, ideate, go from block out to final, do all the materials, textures, do all the assets, kind of build it yourself and do all the level marking up and setting up and whatever else was required over the course of a production. I think the industry has changed quite a bit due to the complexity of the art assets now, the visual fidelity we're trying to hit, that no longer can a single individual or two do an entire level from start to finish in the same way you used to. I think now it's a lot more collaborative, which brings its own pros and cons. It's a lot more, or should be a lot more, process driven. I think a lot of projects run into issues where they don't have the right strengths in the right areas, and you may have found it yourself in previous projects where you either have a clear direction and know what you're doing in terms of the vision, and that's great, or you don't, and that causes issues for production. Or you have a clear pipeline, or you don't, and that has its own issues. And there's always moments where you have to rework, or if people haven't established the like visual quality bar for the art across the game correctly, then that can affect the teams. So I think there's a lot more importance now on proper project setup and developing the project in pre-production better. I think there's a lot more onus on that now than there used to be. Because before, like 2007 to 11, you could be quite ad hoc and, oh, we just have some fun, create some cool stuff. And we know we kind of need these things, but we'll figure it out later. I think it's a lot less simple to do that now.
Yeah, so not that many, like back in the day, there was not this like whole big project where you had like lots of project planning and Jira tasks and
yeah, it was a lot looser back then.
And yeah, it was like more, let's, we have this to do, let's jump right into it and do our thing.
Yeah, there was definitely still plans, but it was more high level milestone based, like in 3 months we need to have these levels white boxed, and that was it. That's the kind of as granular as you got. How you got there and the process to get there was kind of left to the team to figure out. And there's pros and cons to that, I think. Sometimes
let's speak about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the con for it was it's harder to track the quality bar unless the game director, art director, and creative directors were really on it. That kind of process does not work because they need to really keep an eye on where things are going and track that quality. Otherwise, you could just burn the entire 3 months and end up with nothing, which sometimes happens. Yeah. But then nowadays, I've been on projects where they've been overplanned to death. Which is good as well because you kind of predict where things are going to go, but then any deviation in the plan and like alarms go off and things get stressful and people panic. So there was a creative freedom, I think, that was nice way back when, where now it's definitely, especially if you're in co-development and coordinating with multiple studios.
Yeah, it's gone, right?
You need to be really communicative. You need to be really collaborative. You need to definitely plan to make sure that different teams aren't stepping on each other's toes. Which especially in the height of finishing a game or the last few months of a production, you need to be really clear in what you're doing and what your team's doing to make sure that people don't waste time or stomp on each other's work or break things. But I think there's a balance to be had. I think in pre-production or the early production of a game, in my opinion, it should probably follow the slightly looser method where until you actually get to the point where your demo feels good, plays good, does what you need, you probably shouldn't get too upset about planning, but you should still have a firm milestone of in 6 months, you want to be able to lock this down, but then not worry about that journey too much other than keeping a creative eye on it. And then when you get into production, I do prefer nowadays where it's a lot more tight because otherwise, previously in production, stuff was just all over the place and no one's tracking it. And you only realize things aren't coming in like a few months to the end and it's not ideal. And that's where crunch comes in, right? It's always from bad planning. So I think there's definitely room for both in different phases of the process is how I would do it.
I would say that the creative freedom is still there in pre-production. Like there are still some phases where you can a bit play around, but I imagine things have changed.
I think it needs to be more, but the reason it has changed is just the size of the teams. I tend to look at games credits to check out team sizes. I'm boring like that. But it's mainly research and knowledge. And basically, a lot of the games this year had anything from like 200 to 500 artists on the dev teams.
It's crazy.
So if you consider coordinating that many people, you really need to be organized. And I think that's where, when I worked at like Evolution way back at the beginning of my career, the team size, as I said, was between 20 and 50-ish, depending on when we were in production and when we weren't. Maybe there was a little bit of outsource for characters and some other assets possibly and vehicles, but generally speaking it's a very different thing.
Like going through credits nowadays, I find it quite interesting. I did it on Hogwarts Legacy. I'm like,
did you see me?
I know this company. I know this person. They worked on this game. This company also worked on this game. It's crazy. And not
that
just art related,
a lot of studios,
it's also like programming.
That game had a lot of contributors.
Maybe this is one of the reasons why it was like it worked that smoothly and it had lots of stuff thrown into the game because it needed lots of content because the world is so big and needs to be so immersive. So I imagine it wouldn't be possible without outsourcing.
Outsourcing and co-development, I think, is kind of the way the industry is going to go. I think it makes sense because in the end, not every studio is big enough to do a game on their own anymore like they used to, unless the studio is 250, 400 people. It's probably not likely in most instances.
Even the big games, they are outsourcing already.
But they always have. I mean, it's you know, the Naughty Dogs of the world or any other game. Just check the credits. And that's what I often tell people who sometimes don't really consider it. It's like, just go check the credits and look at the main team credits and then wait for all the outsource credits. And you know all the outsource studios coming up at the end. There's quite a lot of work going on. Yeah. And it's efficient and it makes sense because that's how you get that kind of consistent quality that, you know, if you try to get an in-house team to do that across so much content, they'll have to fly through it really fast. Build the same amount,
especially with the complexity of the game itself nowadays. It's like, it's undoable.
Exactly, and it's only getting more complex as time goes on, so it's becoming more of a challenge, I think. And that's where just one thing I was going to mention about the art director role is I do think the role has changed quite a bit, because as I mentioned at the beginning, for me originally it was, and maybe it has been in other people's view, all about the creative vision, the visuals, the concept, the final image. That's where the art direction focus would have been on a lot of projects. But now I think the art director role is as much about delivery, to make sure that all the teams are working coherently, all the teams have what they need, and they're all coordinated. And it's actually also involved by getting the game in the box and getting it out the door to a good quality. And that's why you see some companies, again, you can check the credits to confirm which, but quite a few companies now have discipline-specific art directors. So you'd have like a brand art director and a overall art director for a game, but then you'd also have like a props art director, an environment world art director, a concept art director, a character art director, VFX art director, lighting, and so on. But I think that makes sense, because not one person, and after experiencing it a bit myself, you cannot be brilliant all these things at any one time together at the same time,
especially now.
It's impossible as it gets more technical and complex. So to get the kind of quality we'd say something like Insomniac does, like with Spider-Man 2 just out this week, which looks fantastic, I'm sure that team credit list is huge, and I'm sure they've had multiple art directors to keep it that consistent and to hit that level of quality as fast as they do. They're a pariah within the industry at the moment. They're doing so good in getting out so many high quality games at such a high rate. It's really impressive. Like, from my view, seeing what they're getting out and how they're doing it, and the fact that it performs well, few bugs, looks great, plays fantastic. It's like they're just killing it in every angle. And to me, that's like the aspirational goal, is to be that efficient and that tight on games. Easier said than done.
Did you pre-order Spider-Man?
I didn't, but I will be getting it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did. So I'm looking forward to a weekend of gaming.
Yeah, no, I didn't yet. I played
the first one four times. So,
oh wow,
two times on PS4 and two times on PS5. So I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. I'm really looking forward.
Yeah, I've definitely played it through once and the Miles Morales. But yeah,
that as well.
Yeah, I'm going to sit down and probably around Christmas time would be the moment.
It's perfect.
But I'm waiting on Alan Wake 2, so that's where I'm at. It's out in a week or so, and I want to have that.
It exclusive, right? It's Xbox exclusive, right?
No. It's on all consoles. Not. It's a download only for... They're going to kill me if I get it wrong. But yeah, it's for obviously Epic Games via PC, PS5, Xbox. So yeah, it's on everything.
Oh, cool.
So yes, I'll be getting that on PS5 download. That's where I'll be on 27th of October to check it out, because having worked on the remaster for like 18 months, I just want to know how it finishes. Like, I need to know the rest of the story. I've had zero involvement with 2, so as a fan, I can now enjoy it completely new. And yeah, I really want to know what happens. So
crazy.
That's why I've deferred Spider-Man until Christmas, because I want that first, and then I'll jump into the open world.
Understood.
Cool. But I was going to say, from your point of view, because you've obviously done a lot of kind of outsourced stuff, prop stuff, and worked at different companies. I mean, for you, how do you see an art director from your point of view? Because I always find it's interesting to ask people that when you work with an art director, like, how do you see them working, and what would you like them to do more of? Or do you see things that art directors do that you don't appreciate as an artist? Whether it's,
So for me, art directors have always been, because I'm not that long in the industry, but they always have been like this super human being that is like figuring out all the stuff that is going on in like art wise in a game. So what I would like to see more, because I work with some art directors, is like to have a bit more one-on-ones or speaking with the artists that are down in the trenches, because at the moment I feel like they are always a bit high above. I know they need to take care of like super high level stuff, but it would feel like a bit more connected to the game and to the art direction itself if I speak with the art director, and maybe if he speaks with me about the game and more about the art I'm contributing to the project. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's kind of the wish for everyone, but from experiencing it, it's very difficult to be in every place, absolutely, every time, for every person. Absolutely. But I do make every effort, and my team can then correct me in the comment section on YouTube. But usually I tend to at least try to be as communicative as possible. But as our studio has grown, because when I joined the D3T, there was about 10 to 13 artists when I joined, and now we're hitting 50, I think, after 3 years. So we've grown quite a bit, so it's hard to track everyone all the time. Mm-hmm. But we have a great set of leads, and we've recently hired an associate art director to help me out, and we have a decent bunch that we do get to speak to them regularly enough. But I do want to get back to, as you said, working more one-on-one again would be one of my goals over the next few months, to kind of get back into that mindset.
I understand it's like super hard, especially when the team size is that big to speak with. But maybe you can make like, you don't need to have one-on-ones, but you maybe can split it up to 10 person and one art director, and they can shoot questions and go through art and maybe speak about other things. Maybe once a week, speak about the latest art direction in the Spider-Man game. What was that? What was like so good in this game? Like, how did they manage to create such an amazing looking game? Maybe. This was what I miss sometimes.
I mean, for me, the biggest thing that I always would speak to clients about, and in my opinion one of the most important things, which is part of getting your pipelines right early in production and getting your benchmarks consistent and correct, is consistency itself. That all these games that have come out and just blown us away as players would be consistency. Like that Spider-Man game and ones like it at those kind of budgets and comparable titles, it's the consistency of the art, that there's nothing in it that you look at and go, that's bad. Everything's good to a certain level. Everything's like mapped well. There's no normal errors, issues. I won't name the franchise, but like there's a big franchise, FPS, you can guess later on. I've been playing as research over the last week or two, just in general, because I want to do some FPS research. And I found a lot of like vertex normal issues and kind of bad UVs. And some of these titles range from like 2016 to now. I've been playing through a series of different FPS games and stuff like that nowadays, you know, are things that you wouldn't want to ship with, right? For me, when I work with my teams, we kind of have like a zero tolerance policy for any errors like that. You want to keep it as polished as possible, because all these games that come out that are 9s out of 10s and they're fantastic experiences, you can bet there's very few issues in there like that. So it's kind of the technical quality of the art needs to be kind of constantly getting checked by the leads and ADs. It's kind of a team effort where everyone's involved to make sure it goes out as polished as possible.
Yeah.
I think that's just a big thing for getting something out that really feels high quality, is consistency.
Yeah.
Aside from, of course, great visuals and a visual identity and all these kind of things matter as well, of course. But I think there's one unifying factor that every game can get right, is set your bar early, set your consistency kind of expectations early, make sure all the team are educated and you have a lot of documentation and things set up for them to understand this and to apply it as they're building the assets. And that goes a long way to A, having fewer bugs in a production at the end, but also you get the payoff that the game just looks good for most of it, with a few discrepancies or inconsistencies. But that's just one of my personal pet peeves. Other art directors might disagree. That's fine. And that's the other thing I was going to say, is the art direction role, from what I said, the way it's evolved, it's completely changed, in my opinion. I think the art direction role can be different depending on the art director and the team. That you need kind of the right fit between the art director and the team to balance out each other's skill sets. Not everyone's perfect at everything. So some art directors might be visual geniuses, might not know a lot about pipelines. So they need a strong lead or strong tech art direction to complement their skill sets. Yeah. So, yeah.
So that you're now an art director, do you miss creating props?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In my personal time, I still kind of dabble and want to get in when I can. I do try and do stuff on project, but it very often fails just due to time and meetings and stuff happens I have to get involved in, and reviews and stuff like that. But absolutely. I've been learning Blender over the last year. I've been doing a lot more drawing. I've kind of created like an Instagram account with a bunch of sketchbook stuff just for myself to dabble and do things whenever I get a free couple of hours. So yeah, in the last year or so, I've definitely been jumping back in, if you will, because I've had kids as well for the last 10 years and yeah. You know, they're older now. So I'm getting free time back because my career kind of really stopped just as when I had kids, and it kind of paused everything for a little bit and just kept it steady until the kids are now 12 and 9. So now that they're a bit older, I'm finding the kind of opportunity again to get back into art in my own time.
So yeah, going over your portfolio, there is some really cool drawings in there.
Yeah, it's old. It all needs updating, which is why I'm doing it. Yeah, yeah, no, definitely most of the fresher stuff is on my Instagram. I am working towards getting more finished work showing off what I can do now on my portfolio. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, my little training ground for that is my Instagram account. So yeah, it's difficult. And that's what I found becoming an art director when I used to work on environments and shaders and materials and props and levels and all that kind of stuff. It was a bit of a weird adjustment because you're no longer then just doing that. You then have to look at and work with concept artists, engineers, designers, QA. You have to work more closely with UI, VFX. So my first kind of few projects as an art director were quite eye-opening, where they kind of brought back skills that I had, but I left kind of go a bit stale, and I've had to kind of reopen myself back to all these things again to kind of get more current and be more useful on the team. And one thing I'll admit, like as an art director, I am not the best concept artist in the company. I never will be. I am not the best environment artist or whatever, but I've done enough of every one of the jobs that I'm really good at connecting the dots between all the teams, which is kind of the art direction role. I'm really good at seeing the big picture where we need to go. I'm very good at drawing the line between the aspiration where the team is at and kind of getting them there. I think that's a crucial part of art direction. And that's what I was going to say earlier on, actually. The art direction no longer stops at the concept phase. I really and truly believe art direction now should go throughout the entire production, all the way from the first concepts right through to the final image rendered, that it's everything in between. Is responsibility of an art director to go from point A to point B with the team.
Yeah, I think we can definitely speak about that, because we're already getting like into this kind of topic. What would you say like is then super critical for art director? You already spoke about like seeking or like hitting the requirements of the team and getting right what the client wants and kind of finding the right sweet spot between that. Let's just speak about that a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the project. So if we take, if I was working on a new IP with a team, the biggest thing would be setting the vision for that, what the creative pillars are, what are the creative constraints, what is the world you're trying to build. So if you're in that early pre-production phase, then that would be the most important thing initially, would be just getting that high level creative direction. And all of it can change. It always does. No game I've ever seen has a very clear creative direction, goes into production and comes out exactly the same. It never happens. So usually there's going to be some sort of shifting and moving as things develop and trends change and other people get involved. So early on, it's that. It's getting the engagement from the team. It's inspiring the team. It's getting the team on board to go on this journey with you. And then listening to the team as well, because in the end, for me, I see myself in my role is I'm there to support a team. I'm not there to tell a team what to do. I'm there to facilitate them and support them to fill in any gaps of knowledge or opinions, or if people can't decide on something, I'm there to nudge them along or help. And sometimes I'm there to dictate and say, okay, it's going to be this because that's the need for this project, or that's the genre, or that's the mood we're going for. So this is the shape, language, or color we're using. So there are moments when you have to create these kind of constraints, which should be in the original kind of creative direction anyway. Well, that's where I find myself kind of day to day. When you start to hit production, the art director should be turning their eyes either themselves or with the team to start looking at pipelines, review process, who's in charge of what, breaking it all down, getting it all organized so the leads and everyone understands what they're all doing to be efficient. And once you hit the production phase, it'll largely be just seeing what fires kick off and if things are changing, trying to limit any major reworks or any major problems with the team, or be open to change, but then consider it against budgets and time, and can you do things you want to do? Sometimes the right decision is to throw a bunch of work out and just start again. Other times it's stay the course and finish what you have rather than going a direction that might change too much. So I think, yeah, art direction after that point is about making kind of regular decisions to get to the end, basically, which is when I go back to the earlier comment of the responsibility is just get it in the box and get it shipped. I think it's a very complex role at that point because you've so many voices and everyone's throwing in their own input, and the team should be given some kind of creative freedom to input in their own way, because I think it's always richer and deeper when each artist can contribute within the creative pillars and actually kind of add to that and add elements in throughout production. I find always works really well, and you end up with a stronger identity at the end, I believe.
Nice.
But that all needs kind of managing and checking. Yeah.
So what you just mentioned is like, it's mostly related to communication with your team, but how do you handle communication with the client in this case? Like what is maybe important for an art director when it comes to communication, not just with the one side, but also with the other side?
Yep, it's both. You need to keep both in the loop. I often see myself as I am the evangelist for my team, but I'm also a representative for the client to my team. So whenever I start a new project now as a co-developer, but this would be the same if I would just pick Ubisoft because they're big, right? And they make big games. They're awesome. So if you're working at somewhere like Ubisoft, you might be working with a brand director who's still internal in your company, but they own like the Assassin's Creed brand, so you need to work with them. It's not much different than me working with a client with their brand and their IP. So this can happen whether you're in-house or co-dev, basically. And when working in that situation, you just need to communicate. You need to find out what their desires are, what are the items you're willing to kind of allow a bit of freedom on, what things are kind of locked in that they need to have. And usually it's just a lot of communication and discussions that when we begin working with a new team, it's figuring out kind of what the aspirations are for the project, where they would like to see it. Usually most clients give you like an art Bible and you get given a whole bunch of documentation onboarding, and you kind of sift your way through all that. And then you have a meeting to discuss what's still relevant, what's changed, why has it changed? Have you tried this in the past? If you did, why didn't it work? And it's building a picture of all of those decisions and understanding where you're at and why. And I find that's where my role then becomes from the client side, is understanding explicitly what they want, communicating that to the team, and then course correcting the team as they go, so the client doesn't have to do as much of that as they probably shouldn't need to. And it's not always fully smooth. Things on the client side change very often because game dev is never simple, for very good reasons at different times of productions, whether it's user test feedback, whether it's exec feedback, whether it's trend changes within an industry or genre, or fidelity changes because of tech, for example, if new engines come out or new features. There's always going to be variables in game development that make it tricky. And when these things happen, it's then working with the art director of the client and the team and the leads to manage how all that gets kind of re-sorted out and fixed, and to make a better product, basically. It can get complicated, but communication is the key to the whole thing. It's open, transparency, always being available, always being ready to have those conversations.
Yeah, speaking of variables, even the art direction itself is variable. I was part of some projects where there was like a whole new shift in art direction, from stylized to a mix of stylized and realism. So how do you make sure, as an art director, if something like this happens, or whether it doesn't happen or not, how do you make sure that the art style is always consistent during the project? Because there are lots of different artists, they need to nail the art style, maybe lots of different interpretation of this art style. How do you make sure this is like, nailed?
Yeah, the best examples I've seen of this, and what I tend to like to do myself, is during the pre-production phase, that you have a small team doing look development during the whole phase. So my personal way that I'd like to develop projects is you have your kind of prototype team who are building out the gameplay and white boxing levels and everything involved in that to make sure the game plays well and is fun, because it should always be gameplay first. Then at the side of that, you have a team building out the pipelines, sorting out shaders, sorting out how you're going to build the levels, how new technology can be used maybe or leveraged, and doing those kind of investigations. But then I'd have another team which is purely looking at what you said, at the art style and the visual direction. So initially with a mix of concept artists and myself and whoever else is involved, it's going out, figuring out what is the right style for this genre based on market trends. Do you want to do something subversive? You spend a lot of time figuring out what the style could be. You don't always get it right, which is why you get shifts and changes. But in terms of alignment for the team, you should always aim during pre-production with that look dev team to have established exact benchmark assets, exact processes for how you get the style, the exact rule set for the style. So whether it's the thickness of a bevel, whether it's the simplification of certain shapes or a texture style, it all needs to be broken down in clear visual guidance, whether it's videos or documents with examples in engine that people can open at and look at. After that, my general way to work with it is once the team gets all this documentation, it's bring them through it on a couple of calls, discuss it, discuss the reasons why you've chosen to do this. Then actually let them have a stab at it each on their own. And then it's working with each individual artist to see which bits they stumble on, which bits they excel at, where they need an extra bit of guidance, and then working one-on-one to get it locked in. Because if you can then teach your leads, your seniors, principals, and the mid-levels all how to do this style, and they all understand the same information, then the rest of the project should, in theory, run pretty smooth. But you always need to be checking and just playing the build. And that's the other thing as well, is when making games, especially at lead or art director level, you need to be playing the builds all the time. You need to be getting an engine. You need to be seeing what's coming through the pipeline and picking things out randomly or not, and assessing where it's at to make sure you're not shifting too far. But as you said, again, it's communication, and more so visually is what I'd prefer that you need. I think actually animated movies are the best at this. If you ever look at the behind the scenes content or art books of animated movies, especially back like the old kind of Disney ones, they would have fantastic breakdowns of model sheets, how characters' clothing interacts, how many folds to put on a skirt. Like, they're very explicit, and that's basically defining an art style, that they had hundreds of people drawing these animated cartoons that all had to be exactly the same and never change off model. So it's basically that, but on steroids for games. It needs to be really explicit. But this is where I find I'd give an art style a tight range, and I'd make sure the team has a bit of wiggle room to maneuver in. So not everything has to be exactly the same as if it's done by one person, but it all has to be coherent and consistent beside each other.
Nice. Yeah, I think you really nailed it. It's kind of crazy if you think about that. Like, there are a bunch of artists out there, and they are all in one project, and they all have this one force pushing towards a game. And it's crazy. It's like magic, right?
I think it's the hardest thing to do, and I often said it to people, and I still believe this, and other people can shout at me if I'm wrong. Is I do think it's harder to do a stylized game well than it is to do a hyper realistic or realistic game. I genuinely think stylized game, for the reason you mentioned, that to make it coherent across a team, because not every artist likes doing stylized. Like, I think your portfolio yourself is quite hyper realistic. So if you were thrown a Valorant prop tomorrow or something for Fortnite, you're probably going to need to adapt.
Exactly. And
that's one lesson I would tell most artists today, that it's cool to specialize, but I do think you need to be open to try new things. So throughout my career, like, I've worked on Motorstorm, worked on Drive Club, I've worked on some IPs that I can't discuss that are quite realistic, like to the point of like almost CG photoreal realistic. Then I've also worked on the Lego Dimensions Powerpuff Girls, which is the complete opposite of all this. And I found it really enjoyable to test myself out in all the different styles. And I love it. Every time a game comes in, like, to work, and I get to see the style, I'm like, oh, this is new, I haven't done this before. And I'd be the first person to dive in and just deconstruct it, understand it, break it down, understand all the decisions, and kind of really get in the mindset of the people that made those calls, and then just really get into your skin, and then just keep it for the future. Because there's good reasons to do it.
I think you can learn from it whether or not you're going to end up doing stylized at all. I think you get a better understanding of how creating a prop works in a wide range. I think it always trains something in your brain to kind of maybe to analyze how the colors are shaped, or to analyze how the prop is formed, what shape language is done in stylized. I think this is some some things are trained in that case that are always valuable, whether or not you do stylized or realistic.
Because again, for me, recently, I've mainly, as I said, worked on racing games, platform games, and kind of third-person narrative. Won't go into details of current projects, but there's been one we've been working on for the last while where it's really changed my opinion of color use within a game. That it's a lot more, it's aesthetically pleasing, but it's a lot more functional than I would have ever anticipated. And it's totally made me change how I look at color in games now and value and how it all goes together. So it's something that I'll be taking forward to other projects, even if it's not exactly the same genre or use case. There's still benefits of having this theory and knowledge.
Yeah.
And people, this is where people don't really, and that's probably one thing I'd say about the games industry today, it's gotten too specialized, because I myself have come, as you can see from my portfolio, it's quite a generalist background. And I know there are people out there that are generalists, but it's so difficult now because the bar is so high with people joining the industry. And one of your questions was obviously, what are you looking for in 3D artists and things to kind of give advice there? And I think the technical bar now is higher. To hit the bar that you have in your portfolio, that people really need to focus on learning, like the painter, different types of modeling, ZBrush, Houdini, whatever they might need, substance designer. And by the time you do all that, you're almost missing some of that generalist knowledge, which is like art fundamentals, art theory, color use, the final image. And they're the things that I think you can get, like I did, as you begin your career. Because just because you join as a 3D artist doesn't mean you're going to be that in 15 years. And I didn't, as I said, predict to be art director. It was never a goal. I kind of just went from role to role to role and realized, oh, I'm good at this bit, I'm going to do this. And then you realize, oh, I'm good at this bit too, I'm going to go over here now. So I have no grand plan to get to the role I'm in now. I kind of just followed what interested me. I really like the pipeline side of it. I really like creative direction. I'm very much into artistic decisions and how it impacts gameplay, how it supports gameplay, how it supports a mood, shape language, all that kind of stuff. And all these things have all come together basically to make me realize as an art director, like as I mentioned, I can connect all the dots between all the different teams and I can make sure it all comes together as a final piece. And to me, I've learned that is kind of what an art director should be doing. That each has their own style, but I think it's changing to the point where every team needs the art director just to kind of glue to bring it all together.
Yeah. So for me, when I started in the games industry, it was 2019.
Oh, cool. Fresh.
It was like so late to the stage already. It was a time where you like could easily get distracted with already going into specialization, like weapons or hard surface. Like I would say, like 7 or 8 years ago, I think there was not that specializations already like it is now.
Oh, no, there's a bit of everything. Like when I started out, in the first 6 months, I started off making like wooden fences, then barrels, then vegetation. Had to learn how to do that. Then you're doing like trees and rocks, and then you're building levels. And so my first like 6 months to a year in the industry, I did like everything all at once. In quick succession.
And this is
it was
great.
Just an insane learning curve to pick it all up. And I remember being in the office one day and they needed somebody to take over a level and just block it out. I'd never done that before. I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. But I was interested. I was like, yeah, I'll do that. I'll jump in. And I never regret one decision like that. If someone says, can you? Usually I'm the person to go, yeah, I'll do that. It sounds cool. Yeah. And if I don't know how, I'll figure it out. And if I do know how, I'll do it well and move on. But I think it's just something that's missing nowadays that I'm seeing from people who join our team, people I work with at different teams, people I look at an art station on Discords, even looking at your portfolio, fantastic prop quality. But then what's your experience with building levels from the ground up? What's your knowledge of level design, composition? It's difficult. It's a tough job. I think the job is much harder now and the expectations are higher than when I started. So it's hard to keep pace. And even me, I'm still learning today. I'm still trying to keep up to date like everybody else and still trying to push my skill sets in different areas and trying to stay balanced with the rest of the team.
I joined at a time where there was like this switch happened to specialization is getting more and more important because nowadays studios are so big. They have lots of specialized roles for like hard surface, weapon artists, prop artists, environment artists, technical artists. Go ahead. But I joined at a time where this was I got distracted to specialize in something because, yeah, it was needed. And it was like, for I would say a bit more, told you, the industry told you that, you know, because when you look at career pages on studios, there are so many specialized roles at these days. You were like, what do I pick? Weapons are cool. I want to become a weapon artist. So I just do weapons. And with your experience, I think you are a way more versatile now because you started out so early and the industry was so young in these days. And you had to do so many different things back in the days because there were no
just people. Just a smaller team.
That were specialized in that. Yeah, yeah.
I still think the opportunity should be there for the likes of yourself now who've joined in recent years. That, I mean, if you ever get to the studio where you have those opportunities to diversify your branch, I would take up chances to do it. Or even in your, again, different conversation topic, but people who want to develop their own skills in their own time. And this is something I did over the years, that even though I was working as like environment artist for years, I still did drawing on the side. I was still doing concepts, comics, messing with animation, fiddling with storyboarding. I was doing like other things all the time outside of work. But that's where I don't think people should feel pigeonholed. The industry's big enough. And some skill sets, like you mentioned, tech art, VFX, vegetation art. But there's a huge amounts of requirements across different disciplines. Many people shift and change throughout their career, as I have. And I work with many artists now at D3T who used to be in one role, are now in a different role. They've swapped over. Once they've got comfortable in one and they have the kind of good, strong skill sets in general, then we can train them up into something else. So the industry, again, it's a journey, right? Your career is not going to be just props forever. So you should always be open, always be agile enough to be willing to try different things.
Absolutely. So let's come to the last question. What are you looking for? I think we already spoke about that a bit, but what are you looking for when you look at portfolios or when you look at 3D artists? What are like the first two or three critical criterias that are important for you?
Yep. I mean, this is an easy one for me because that's kind of my bread and butter. But yeah, usually for me, first of all, being a co-developer, we generally have a wide variety in style and content. So I don't specifically go looking for weapon artists or any particular specialization. So then we're going back to generalist. So when I look at portfolios, I'm looking for a good eye for detail. I'm looking for well-presented work with nice lighting. I'm looking for good material definition across assets. I'm looking at nice modeling, efficient UVs, all pixel aligned, consistent texture density. It's all just, you know, can they do the job? Do they have a good eye? What are they all about? Like, I'm very open to an artist having a mix of styles, or even if they're specialized, it's seeing the potential beyond that at times. So it's the technical quality is the first thing I'd look for to make sure they can do the job, especially as you go into mid-level and senior and lead. I need to make sure that you really get how to make content for games efficiently so you can review the work of others and mentor other people. If it's just someone coming into the industry, I'm looking for that potential that they have a grasp on it. They don't have to be perfect at it, but there has to be enough knowledge in there that they kind of get the importance of good geometry and end guns or quads, whatever you want, good UVs. And the big one, I think, is just the finish level would be one thing, because obviously your portfolio is a good example of most of the stuff is presented really well. All the props look great. There's clear material definition, very nice work overall. So it's that kind of level would be the thing that I get most inspired about and engaged by. If I go through someone's portfolio, it's even if it's only a small few assets of that level, it says a lot about the person that they finished it to that point. They went all the way to the end. And I think that would be actually, it's the really finished work where every step of the process has been followed and shown in breakdowns. And the end result, even if it's not perfect, they've gone that extra mile to make it look good. Because going in ArtStation or looking through portfolios that I get to see often to hire people, most of the work is probably about 70% complete. They never really finished UVs or finished a model or finished the presentation. They kind of do everything to a point and move to the next stage because it seems like there's a rush on. And I think for 3D artists especially, it takes so long to make the content in the first place. By the time you go through block out, mid poly, high poly, back into game res mesh, back into engine, set up shaders, by the time they get to the lighting, many just go, okay, it's in Unreal, get a screenshot, don't care, done, it's on my portfolio.
Yeah.
Where that extra little bit, it's spend that extra couple of days if you need it to make sure it looks as good as it can in terms of the presentation, the backgrounds, the lighting. And to be fair, most of your work going through it here, you've done exactly that and it's perfect. It's like, just finish it off as you began the work. Don't just cut it off at the end and go, I'm done now. I think that's one of the biggest things I see as a common issue.
Yeah,
it's like flat lighting, you don't see the shape and forms well, you don't read the materials well. They've done all the work and it could look fantastic, but they've kind of skimped on the last little bit. But yeah, the big stuff is just capability to do the job, so a knowledge of all the aforementioned elements. Does that tie into what you'd be expecting, or are there any other points you're thinking we'd missed?
So people get your things done and finish it up and make it look nicely in the portfolio.
Oh, it makes a big difference that, the majority of the portfolios don't quite get that far. So even if you do it on a handful of assets, you're already going to be a lot higher.
True.
On the pile. And it's a credit to yourself, right? If you put so many hours in to do it, finish it properly.
Yeah. To be honest, sometimes when I maybe get declined by a project or something, I sometimes go over my portfolio and I'm like, what should I throw out?
That's maybe good to do. It's healthy.
Maybe this is. But still be proud of the things you have done, and not just downvote everything you have.
Oh no, exactly. And if you look at my portfolio, my art station is actually like an archive. So I use my Instagram as my sketchbook. My art station is like an archive of most of the things I've done over the years. And then my actual portfolio website is a bit of a curated version where I have the better stuff. But even then, I'd probably scrap most of that and get new content on there as soon as it's ready. And yes, it is true. Art directors still have to update the portfolios too.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of affairs.
Thank you so much. It was great having you on the show. You really gave a great insight. I really enjoyed the talk with you.
If people ever have questions or like around to or submit questions, we could always look at that.
Sure. I will put your portfolio and your Instagram into the show notes or into the info box. And if you have any questions, leave a comment. I think Anthony will check by and answer them for you guys. Thank you so much.
I will just advise people. Yes, my portfolio is a bit old. I'm well aware. I'm working on it. Thank you, like everyone else. So yes, the life of an art director and dad is busy. So I try to put my focus on the kids, the work, and then anything I fit in after, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
But I do promise I am working on nice art stuff on the daily basis that will be seen in like 5 years or whatever games come out.
I think people are looking forward.
Cool. But thank you for the opportunity of having a chat. It was really good.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.